is Robert Haynes Jr.
Special support provided by Hybrid Spring Water, Nate's Coffee, the staff at the Lyric Theater, and Azure Restaurant and Patio in Lexington.
Our show is produced with the support of VisitLux.com, Deering Banjos, Travel Host Magazine, the Bluegrass Hospitality Association, and the Embassy Suites Lexington Green, welcoming visitors from all over the world to Lexington, Kentucky.
Woodsongs and the Woodsong Symbol are registered trademarks of Rachel Aubrey Music. Our show is distributed worldwide by the Woodsongs Radio Network and PRX. Thanks for listening. I'm Josh Bayer.
For Michael Jonathan and the entire Woodsongs crew, this is Dorothy Edwards. We hope you will join us again next week for the Woodsongs Old Time Radio Hour.
As the COVID-19 pandemic continues to spread, it is important to stay safe. Coronavirus is now in Canadian provinces and territories. By law, if you have traveled abroad recently, you must self-isolate. To do your part, stay home as much as possible and practice social distancing. Try to maintain at least 2 meters away from others. Encourage those who are sick or showing symptoms to self-isolate or to seek medical attention. As always, wash your hands frequently, avoid touching your face, and practice good respiratory etiquette by covering your coughs and sneezes. Clean regularly used surfaces. COVID-19 symptoms can mimic colds and flu and include fever, cough, and difficulty breathing. Infected individuals may also have mild symptoms or none at all. For up-to-date information, check reliable sources like your local health authority or the Public Health Agency of Canada.
Let's have fun with abortions. Or maybe not. I was going to call this episode Let's Have Fun with Abortions, but then I thought maybe that didn't quite strike the right tone. Maybe it was too cavalier. On the other hand, maybe nothing can ever be too cavalier. Or maybe cavalierishness is actually the only sensible method for handling very serious things. Basically, I couldn't decide, so I aborted that title. I figured that not knowing if I was striking the wrong tone or not might be proof that I was striking the wrong tone. But then again, is it even possible to strike the right tone when it comes to abortion? Or maybe sounding complicated and going around in circles is itself the right tone which embodies the way people discuss abortion. It's a topic that gets people instinctively riled up, but at the same time, these are topics where it might be the most important to have a free, complex, curious conversation. Conversations that operate outside the usual conflict of moral assertions that are clickbait for our souls. So that's what I'm going to try to do today. I'm going to poke around inside the topic, no pun intended, without taking sides or without proposing my own opinion. In fact, it's not even very interesting to me when people have opinions on important topics. There's a chance that opinions and values actually do a disservice to topics. I'll do a show about that sometime. Meanwhile, I think we think better when we feel free to explore things, to flip them around, take them apart, put them back together, decontextualize, recontextualize, follow our curiosity. The same way we would try to learn about fixing car engines or learning to write a poem. So that's what we're doing today on the Cinematic Asylum on CILU 102.7 FM. I'm Layman Pascal, and today's show is all about abortions. If you can't stand uncertainty and flippancy related to serious topics, I suggest you abort your listening process right now. Full disclosure, though, I've never had an abortion or been aborted, so who knows if I've even got any valid perspectives on this topic at all. Let's be clear, I don't claim to have valid perspectives. I feel more like a Pleiadian star traveler just trying to do a quick overview of what's happening on the planet Earth, and it's pretty likely I'll be preternaturally wrong about some of the basic stuff that the humans take for granted. In fact, with this imaginary alien frame in mind, I should probably clarify the topic of the day. It's not about abortion in general. It's very specific. It's about human abortions on the planet Earth. Most humans don't have an opinion about abortions in the Andromeda Galaxy, or robot abortions, or frog abortions, or single-celled things aborting other single-celled things. It's very specific. It's about human abortions, and as far as we can tell, on Earth. And like most things on the planet Earth, people pretend it's divided up into two teams with strong, clear values which know what they're talking about and still disagree with each other. Classic human move. Did you know Canadian rock legend Neil Young did a song about abortion? Let's take a listen. That was Act of Love by Neil Young. Neil Young's abortion song performed at the Voters for Choice benefit concert. Neil Young apparently said about this song, quote, "Personally, I'm pro-choice, but this song isn't." That's the kind of complicated position I feel like I could get behind. You know, these are funny terms, pro-choice and pro-life. I know they're just political marketing tools, but really, when you think about it, is anyone ultimately against either choice or life? How can you be on a side of that? I'm pretty sure everyone on every side of every issue is generally in favor of both choice and life. That's why no one signs up for the pro-death party and the no-choice party. It's because no one likes or identifies with those things, and that's because we all identify with both choice and life. But choice is a strange concept. Choice doesn't exactly tell you whose choice they're talking about. And certainly their opponents don't tell you. In reality, I guess pro-life people are also pro-choice, but they believe in different choosers. When shifty but articulate political candidate Mayor Pete was asked about whether he supported third-term trimester abortions, he said it's not about when, it's about who. Someone makes the decision every time, and it's a difficult decision. Should that person be the government? Should that person be the mother? Should it be doctors? Should it be an ancient magic book or a council of community elders? Should it be the father or the court or nature or randomness? Somewhere along the line, a kind of choice, an analog of choice, is being made no matter what. So no one is anti-choice. They just think different choosers should predominate in particular contexts. It would be a much easier political situation to understand, at least for me to understand, if people just argued about who should get to make the choice. I mean, every miscarriage is nature choosing when abortions happen, or every bit of Sharia law against abortions is the Quran choosing when abortions happen, even if the choice that it makes is never. That's a choice. I actually don't know if the Quran is against abortions. I'm just assuming that desert monotheisms and medieval magic books all pretty much have the same opinion. But even if they don't, you get my point that there's always a choice by someone or something. So the sides in the issue aren't choice versus no choice. They're a woman's choice or somebody else's choice. If you feel like the pregnant woman isn't the party who should get to decide, then maybe you should be upfront about who or what it is that you actually do think should get to make that choice. And what about being pro-life? I think most humans are pro-life in general, regardless of whether they're pro-abortion, pro-capital punishment, pro-war, pro-hunting, or whatever. Everybody's basic orientation about being alive is mediated by whatever other ethical decisions they've made about who or what we get to kill. All pro-lifers are also pro-deathers in some areas. It's not possible to be only pro-life and oppose all death. Anyone who rejects all death will starve in a few days and be gone. Even the cells of your own body have to constantly die in order to allow your organs to live. Nobody gets to be on just one side of the life issue. But what do we even mean by life? I mean, it seems likely to me that there's a basic disagreement among human beings about whether the key thing about life that makes it valuable is simply its difference from death, or whether that key thing that makes life valuable is its quality, intensity, richness, and instinctive desirability. Quality of life versus fact of life. Places that have laws against suicide, arresting you, for example, if you fail to successfully kill yourself, which is a little bit perverse, these places organize their legal and presumably moral frameworks around the mere fact of life. Taking your own life, even if it is an extremely miserable one, is a crime in those systems. Most modern cultures have changed those rules and decided that if your life is really awful, then it's not that weird for you to get to choose to end it. Why shouldn't you have individual legal and moral control over your own death? You are going to die. Why should fate or the government or cancer get to decide when? Why shouldn't you get to decide? Behind this modern shift in values, and perhaps as a result of its emergence on the historical playing field, there's a kind of competition between people who think the value of life is simply the fact of being alive in the group, and those who think the value of life lies in the variable quality of the experience of being alive as an individual. A competition, let's say, between people who think of life as a binary, alive or not, and those who think of life as a gradient or spectrum of being more or less alive, more or less likely to be more or less alive, or less more or less alive in the probable future. If you think of life as a binary yes-no quality, the way an autistic computer programmer thinks about electronic circuits or Nazis think about whether you're Jewish or not, then it makes total sense to think of a fetus as having the exact same rights as anyone else. It's got human DNA and it's alive. That's a living human in the yes-no sense. That's life, the fact of life. And if your rights are based merely on the fact that you are alive rather than dead, then a fetus already has the maximum possible value of a human being. But, on the other hand, that maximum value is also the minimum value in that system. Everyone only has the least possible value of a human life. If you think of life, on the other hand, as a spectrum or gradient, something where you can have more or less of its value, then you might, not necessarily, but you might decide that the negative impact of a fetus on the quality of the life of the parents or society sometimes outweighs the very slight quality of life that is intrinsic merely to the living fact of the fetus or zygote or spermatozoa. Both perspectives can get carried away, I'm sure. We ought not to kill ourselves when we simply stub our toe, even though that can temporarily radically diminish our quality of life. On the other hand, we tend not to arrest men for masturbating, although some, I'm sure, would like to, because we think it's a bit ridiculous to consider that that's a desecration of human life or an act of mass murder, no matter how many potential living human beings it's throwing away. For most people, I guess some threshold different for everyone that has to be crossed, whether that threshold is egg fertilization or birth or something in between or something much later. There's some kind of threshold at which we go, ah, that's a human life now. That's what I mean by really a human with full human value. And a basic dichotomy seems to be that we either think that's human life because it now has the minimal status of being both human and alive, which we assume is the exact same status that all humans have at all times, unless they're criminals or infidels or something. Or else we think that a real human life is something attained, evolved, approached, and accomplished like a rung on a ladder of interior meaning and well-being, and that even a living human being, whether a fetus or a painfully dying man or a lady in a coma for years, doesn't necessarily represent the full value of meaning and well-being possible to a human organism. That it's somewhere on the spectrum, as they say, on the spectrum between those things to which we attribute an intrinsic right to life and those that we don't. Because we all attribute that right to some things and not some other things. In fact, to some people and not to others. So, generally speaking, looking at what they on the earth seem to have as a widespread tension between people who feel the value of life very strongly as its simple facticity and those who feel it very strongly as a degree of quality, what are we to do? Some people think you should have a baby if you can have a baby no matter what, because a living baby is simply the most important thing there is. It is human and alive. That's why. But other people think you should only have a baby if you want one and can provide it with the circumstances, resources, time, energy, and love that will give that baby a high quality of life that it and you both deserve. And if you think you can't give that to a baby right now for whatever reason, those people feel you should not. But that's bizarre to the fact of life people who think by definition any baby is better than no baby, even if it grows up sick, impoverished, unloved, ignorant, and destroys the private hopes of the parents and the general hopes of the society. A small price to pay, they say, for the fact of being alive. It's interesting stuff.
This is a song that has a lot of those kind of words in there that are hard to sing. I just want to see how far this goes here, so. Wouldn't it be nice if we had an amendment to give civil rights to women? To once and for all just really lay it down from the point of view of women. I know what you're thinking, that's just redundant. Chicks got it good now, they can almost be president. But it's worker against worker, time and time again. 'Cause the rich use certain issues as a tool, say we need the ERA, it ain't cause I'm a fool. It's cause without it, nobody can get away with anything cool. And you don't have to go far, like, just over. Trust that women will always do their best. Trust our differences make us stronger, not less. Civil union. It takes unions of all kinds, unions of hearts and minds, to give society communion. Let's do more than tolerate. Let gay and straight resonate and emanate all things human, with equal rights and protection. Intolerance finally ruined. And then there's the kids' rights. They'll naturally be on board the funnel through which women's lives are poured. Our family is so big, we're all so very small. Let a web of relationship be laid over it all, over the strata of power piled up to the sky, over the illusion of autonomy on which it relies, over any absolute that nature does not supply. Shall regain her place in a circle of women in a sacred space. Turn off the machines, put away the knives. This amendment shall deliver from bondage.
Abortion. Abortion, abortion, abortion. This record is called Abortion, Mind Distortion. The world morals is out of proportion. And I want it played in every Walkman. Abortion, abortion.
Annie DeFranco and Doug E. Fresh with Contrary Positions on Abortions. Who knew there were so many songs about abortion? I'm Layman Pascal, and you're listening to CILU 102.7 FM. Today, we're looking at the music and concepts of abortion. Do you know what the Overton window is? People didn't used to talk about it, but now it's everywhere. It's sort of the window of normality, the range of things we consider possible and acceptable. In a cannibal society, the eating of human flesh falls within the normal, acceptable range of dietary options. It's not always eaten. It might seem extreme, but it falls within the broad range of things that can be acceptable under certain conditions. Within that range, we argue about whether or not to eat it. Outside that range, we just don't. It's so off the table it doesn't even come up, except to mock it for being insane. Is misogynism, racism, and insanity acceptable in a presidential candidate? Well, there would be times when the answer was absolutely not. That would disqualify him in almost everyone's eyes. But in 2016, it was sort of not out of the question. They call the Overton's window moving. There's a theory also about how this moving occurs. How do you move the Overton window? The theory goes like this. Human beings, like Mahayana Buddhists, are idiots who always try to take a middle path. Our desire to be moderate, sensible, non-radical means that we sort of semi-consciously get a read on what the two extremes are in any situation, and then we split the difference. The middle is safe territory. The territory around that middle is the Overton window. We might lean a little more to one side, but we're mostly clumped into that central range somewhere. So if you want to change what's acceptable, you have to change the definition of the feeling of what the two extremes are so that people's brains split the difference differently. If you want to get more votes for mild racists, the best thing you can do is spend a few years funding crazy over-the-top racists. No one will agree with them, but people will get used to them and decide, okay, that's the extreme position on the right. We don't want to do that, but we do want to be sensible. We'll pull it back a little bit from there. And lo and behold, moderate racism is suddenly inside the Overton's window again, just like it used to be. One of the many complaints about Barack Obama was that he was a compromiser, a false progressive who always started intellectually from the middle and so always got negotiated into a right-wing position when he actually had to compromise with steadfast Republican enemies. He seemed to pride himself on finding and starting with a practical, balanced position. Sounds virtuous. I'd like to have him over for a beer. But then his Republican adversaries would start from an irrational extreme position of intolerance, and he would have to bargain them down by compromising between his already middle position and their extreme position. Result? Well, the new middle suddenly looks very conservative. Seems like Clinton might have done something similar. So think about how this relates to abortion. Many people want to take what they think is a balanced position on a complex topic. Most people aren't against all possible abortions or in favor of all possible abortions. Both of those sound like crazy positions. Very few people actually think that casual fetus murder is great or that you should never intervene to save the life of an impregnated rape victim whose fetus is killing her from within. Almost everyone is somewhere in the middle. A lot of people are pro-choice in an undefined, somewhat limited fashion without necessarily identifying themselves as pro-choice. A lot of people who would never get an abortion themselves do think that under some conditions, a mother or doctor or family should be able to make that choice. They believe in choice even if they choose not to in most cases. That's their choice. Being in favor of choice seems in principle to be a kind of moderate position. They aren't for all abortions or against all abortions. Sounds pretty reasonable, pretty middle ground, but are they pulling an Obama? If the two sides are pro-choice and anti-abortion, then splitting the difference will result in a situation somewhere between the two, which might be construed as way more than halfway toward the anti-abortion side, especially over time. Regardless of your own position on this topic, you might be able to appreciate the way that balancing out a big no with an only sometimes will result in a position that's closer to no than the sometimes people might be comfortable with. On the other hand, if half the people were not pro-choice but actively pro-abortion, and the other half were actively anti-abortion, then the middle ground, the split difference that evolves over time, might be somewhere closer to choice or to a complex sometimes position of balance. But then again, who's got the moral courage and cantankerousness to actively be in favor of abortions? Sounds radical. Sounds like it currently falls outside of Overton's window. So whatever side you're on, if there are even sides, keep in mind that it may not be the best thing to take a moderate position. Moderate positions may favor one side over the other, or the establishment context from which those choices emerge. And if you want to drag the Overton window in whatever direction you feel is moral, then maybe you should support more extreme positions so that it balances out in a different way over time.
CILU is sponsored in part by the students of Lakehead University, our listeners, and our sponsors. At this time, we would like to thank the following sponsors for their continuous support.
The Foundry at 242 Red River Road, open 11 a.m. to 2 a.m. Monday to Saturday, featuring folk in Mondays, karaoke Tuesdays, trivia Wednesdays, open stage Thursdays, and live music weekends. Find out more at thefoundrypub.com. The Thunder Bay Symphony Orchestra. Log on to tbso.ca or call 626-TBSO for details on the 2019-2020 season and how to get tickets. The Lakehead University Student Union, promoting action, advocacy, and service by bringing you student centers. Learn more by visiting their office in the tunnels of the student center or by logging on to lusu.ca.
The blizzard of the world is crossed the threshold, and it's over. suddenly explode. There'll be phantoms, there'll be fires on the road, and the white man dancing. You'll see a woman hanging upside down. Her feathers covered by falling gown, and all the lousy little boys coming round, trying to sound like Charlie Manson and the white man dancing. Give me back Berlin Wall, give me Stalin and St. Paul, give me Christ or give me Hiroshima. Destroy another fetus now, we don't like children anyhow. I've seen the future, baby, it is murder. Things are gonna slide, starting blizzard of the world has crossed the threshold, and it's overturned the odor of the soul. When they said repent, repent, I wonder what they meant. When they said repent, repent, I wonder what they meant.
Welcome back. I'm Layman Pascal, and this is the Cinematic Asylum's Ill-Advised Dalliance with Abortions on CILU 102.7 FM, and that was Chauncey Jack's cover of Leonard Cohen's The Future, famously from the Natural Born Sealers soundtrack, which features an odd line about fetus killing. Say, do you remember that two-headed puppet on Sesame Street or the Muppet Show or Fraggle Rock or whatever the hell the show was who had to learn words by sounding out the separate syllables? Sure you do. Each head would do part of the word until it kind of ran together into a single concept. Ab-ort. 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 Abort. 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 How does that sound? Kind of weird? What does the word even mean? I'm told by LU Radio's crack research team that in the 16th century, these two Latin words were put together with ab meaning to go astray or expel or deviate from a process, to go out from the course of the process, and ort meaning to appear, arise, or be born. Abnormal, abstract, abomination, aberrant. There's a lot of words with the ab prefix, but, oddly, not a lot of words with the ort suffix. If there's ab-ort, shouldn't there be sub-bort, hyper-ort, anti-ort, proto-ort, trans-ort, cis-ort, poly-ort? There's a lot of different ways to show up, a lot of different ways to arise. So an ab-ort is something that ends or goes out from or cancels a process of showing up. Ab-ort, the launch of the rocket. Ab-ort, the procedure of cooking the pecan and shrimp pie. Pecan and shrimp. Perhaps I should have said abort the process of cooking a bun in that oven. Abort the landing procedure. Abort the docking procedure. Abort, 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 abort. You get the idea. In the 16th century, the word abortion apparently applied equally to deliberate and unintended miscarriages, both abortions of the biological pregnancy procedure. It also applied to the results of an untimely birth, to be born too soon. And this became an insult in the sense of saying that someone is half-baked, didn't get enough time in the womb, is unformed or ill-formed. We don't insult each other today very often by calling each other abortions, but it was a pretty common derogatory term in English over the last couple of centuries. Keep that in mind later when I refer to this entire audience who's listening now as a pack of misshapen troglodytic abortions.
I was just out of high school in my first band, and I married my drummer. Our love was grand. I thought it was forever till death do us part. And then he cheated on me and he broke my heart.
That was Biff Naked's abortion song about her own abortion, Choti. Something amazing has happened on the planet Earth, if that's indeed where this is. Something radical. It's slow moving, though, so we don't see it clearly, and it may take a long time to fully understand its consequences. But the upright monkey-derived species has now pretty fundamentally separated sex from reproduction. These used to go hand in hand, and they did so for a very long time. The neo-Darwinian model of evolution, which has proven itself so extraordinarily useful and accurate, is based on the idea that all living organisms are just vehicles for gene programs to copy themselves. Natural selection does not favor groups or organisms, not really. It favors these little integrated viral packets that make up the DNA double helix in certain forms of itself. They, these little things, they want to duplicate themselves, not you. They don't care about you. They don't even know about you. They are the hidden drivers of the entire history of the biosphere on the planet Earth. Only this idea, apparently, explains how a basically random situation can sculpt itself so perfectly as to fit its environment in ways that look intelligently designed. And don't get me wrong, these things don't want to copy themselves. There really isn't a drive to survive. If there's an underlying drive at all, it might be something so basic it doesn't even understand about survival, maybe closer to what Nietzsche called the will to empowerment, or to the subjective intensification of the coherence of beingness, or to the amplification of the organization and appropriate discharge of capacity, a will that describes what energy does even if there are no life forms. But once you have life forms, you get this weird situation where organisms evolve to invent death and gender. The first organisms didn't necessarily die or reproduce. They invented death, sex, and reproduction, almost like the algorithm or the archetype was just waiting there to be picked. They created what I like to call the Darwinian gate. It means that only those gene packets, Only those integrated viruses that happen to cause bodies and environmental effects, which happen to lead to reproduction of creatures that happen to reach reproductive age before dying, only those ones keep going. Only they pass through the gate. They didn't originally have to, need to, or want to keep going. They didn't necessarily care about surviving, but only the ones that survived, survived. So they were the ones whose will to power or intention to be more of themselves or to act with greater coherence or whatever we imagine the universal root drive of all existence to be, only those ones whose urges also happen to survival have descendants who are still around. All the ones who preferred other things than survival didn't survive as much. So after a generation or two or 3 trillion, the only ones left were the ones whose urges coincided with survival. You could say the will to life, the will to survive, the will to reproduce yourself somehow and keep going, copy yourself into the future is not the original motive, but it will eventually become the dominant motive in situations where mutations, death, and reproductions occur. Eventually, the only ones left will be the ones who tend to copy themselves into the future. The further into the future you go, the more true that is. So once human beings enter the story, we are downstream of countless generations of this stuff already. We inherit bodies and brains that are exquisitely fine-tuned to manipulate us into surviving and reproducing. Every bit of our mind and heart is colored somehow with this neo-Darwinian submission to the genes' attempt to reproduce themselves. Our sex drive has evolved to be what is in accordance with the genes' attempts to make babies who will live long enough to make babies to carry the genes forward. That's Darwin's gate, and that has become the fundamental project of almost every species on Earth. But not anymore. That's what's weird. The whole thing is changing now. The existence of birth control, the manufacture of cheap and accessible and reliable contraceptive devices of all kinds, the ability to chemically or surgically sterilize yourself, and the ability to make test tube babies in high-tech laboratories and alter our very DNA and sculpt the genes outside of our bodies, wild, weird, amazing things which started happening in the 20th century around the same time of the atom bomb and people first going into space and the advent of television. All these things fundamentally change the long-evolved relationship between sexuality and reproduction. Now, you can reproduce without sex, and have sex without reproducing. And this distinction gets easier and more common every day of every year from now on for the rest of the future. That's a pretty big rupture, right? We literally don't have to rely on sex in order to reproduce the genes, and we literally don't have to reproduce the genes in order to have sex. They used to be tightly chained together by both biology and cultural traditions which emerged over long periods of time. Now, despite that long period of time, these two things seem barely related to each other. So it's not surprising that people will have a wildly contradictory response to the new situation that's so radical compared to the last billion years we inherit into ourselves. All of our instincts and our emotions are pretty much passed down to us, finely crafted by the genes who want us to obey them in their endless search for biological self-replication. So there's a natural, widespread emotional urgency about making sure that babies, that is to say, temporary new gene bags, get made. Babies with our genes in them. We have to keep out the foreigners and stay alive and breed in villages where there's resolute support for babies. Anything or anyone, even the pregnant mother who interferes with the process of getting more of our kind of babies, more of our kind of gene packets, have to be stopped, denounced, thwarted with maximum prejudice, because that's the entire purpose of life on Earth. Or at least it was. But it kind of isn't anymore. And that's what's so weird. These totally natural inherited emotions run smack dab into people who are being changed emotionally by the new reality. People who are saying, Look, it's not that important that we reproduce in the old way. Let's relax about that. It's more important that people try to establish the kind of lifestyle they prefer, exercise control over their own circumstances and meaning-making. There's no need to connect sex to pregnancy, and if that happens, it might even be a mistake we could technologically correct. This new reality and the ancient inheritance are crashing into each other. It's no wonder there's so much friction on this topic. Welcome to what the Hindus called the Kali Yuga.
Eyes will drift to the sky in time, while arms keep holding tight. There's a party in full force. Still the guests can't help but watch the door. Expressing your uncertainties through years of anniversaries, then 5 years down the line, you say she was never my type. Lovers are strangers, there's nothing to discuss. Hearts will be faithful while the truth is told to someone else. Lovers are strangers, there's nothing to discuss. Hearts will be faithful while the truth is told to someone else.
When you look up,
tell me who you really love.
When you look up,
tell me who you really love. Fall comes by surprise. Truth is told to someone else. Lovers are strangers, there's nothing to discuss. Hearts will be faithful while the truth is told to someone else.
When you look up,
tell me who you.
дома мало. Дай Бог, чтобы я гулял на твою свадьбу.
Сестрой, как это так?
Michelle Gurevich's Lovers Are Strangers. I'm Layman Pascal, and we're coming up on the end of the show here on CILU 102.7 FM, and there's still so much we haven't touched on. What's the deal with pregnancy help services secretly run by religious groups who want to pressure girls into not getting abortions? And what's the deal with laws that force women to look at the fetus on the monitor before deciding? Is that an unnecessary stress and abuse, or an absolute part of making an informed decision? I mean, you probably should have to be okay with what they do to the chickens if you're willing to eat a chicken burger. That's a kind of basic responsibility feedback loop. But then again, our governments protect corporations from that very kind of exposure. In a lot of places, it's illegal to even distinguish between a GMO and non-GMO product on the shelves because the corporations argue it's just not fair. People get distressed into one particular choice when they're exposed to raw data with a predictable emotional effect. And should men have to legally pay child support in places where the women are entitled to 100% control about whether or not babies will be born? That could be weird. On the other hand, in any sane hybrid of capitalism and socialism, we'd make sure that people had the basic resources they need for living and breeding under any conditions, with the special need for without the special need for someone else to pay for it. And what about the, no, there's no time left. I'm going to have to abort any further inquiry, if you'll forgive the expression. This dangerous but minimal jaunt into reproductive politics has been brought to you by CILU 102.7 FM and the Cinematic Asylum, and who knows, maybe the number 3 and the letter G. G is a hell of a letter. Don't let anyone tell you any different.
Last night I had a dream that all the babies prevented by the pill showed up. They were mad. I was cesarean born. Can't really tell. Although, whenever I leave a house, I go out through the window.
Tonight's main topic concerns abortions. And look, before you change the channel, before you change the channel, I know this is a polarizing topic.
Well, whenever I leave a house, I go out through the window.
In the street for their opinions, the issue wasn't quite as binary as it's usually presented.
If I had to pick, I would say that I'm pro-choice, but personally, I'm more on a somewhere in the middle.
I wouldn't, but I can't choose for other people.
I'm, what do you call it, pro-life. I think when the baby gets a heartbeat, that should be the cutoff point. That's just my stance. I'm not the kind of guy, like, I want everyone to follow my stance.
Okay, well, not needing anyone to follow your stance is a healthy attitude to abortion, and it's also a terrible attitude with which to lead the Rockettes. You do you, Bethany. You do you, girl.
They were mad.
You do you. The truth is, people's opinions on abortion make up a spectrum, but most of us believe it should be legal in at least a few circumstances. In fact, only 19% of Americans told Gallup they thought it should be completely illegal. And if you are in that 19%, you are frankly excused from watching the next place. But do rejoin us at 11:29, because once I'm done talking about this, we'll all be watching a video featuring a bucket of sloths. And I promise you, it is almost violently delightful. But until that time...
As the COVID-19 pandemic continues to spread, it is important to stay safe. Coronavirus is now in Canadian provinces and territories. By law, if you have traveled abroad recently, you must self-isolate. To do your part, stay home as much as possible and practice social distancing. Try to maintain at least 2 meters away from others. Encourage those who are sick or showing symptoms to self-isolate or to seek medical attention. As always, wash your hands frequently, avoid touching your face, and practice good respiratory etiquette by covering your coughs and sneezes. Clean regularly used surfaces. COVID-19 symptoms can mimic colds and flu and include fever, cough, and difficulty breathing. Infected individuals may also have mild symptoms or none at all. For up-to-date information, check reliable sources like your local health authority or the Public Health Agency of Canada.
CIOU is sponsored in part by the students of Lakehead University, our listeners, and our sponsors. At this time, we would like to thank the following sponsors for their continuous support.
Signal Resources Limited, Thunder Bay's locally owned and operated audio-visual professionals. Contact them about your next multimedia event or installation at 807-475-9341 or at signalresources.com. The Thunder Bay Community Auditorium. Find them at tbca.com to purchase tickets and find out all of the details on their upcoming events. Vox Popular Media Arts Festival, located inside Trinity Hall at 310 Park Avenue. Join the fun every September for the annual Media Arts Fest, entering its 16th year in 2020.
Colder. Summer was cold.